Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 2nd, 2020. Police officers are arrested for allegedly raping underage girls in Western Equatoria State.
They were taken back to the police to give them a bit of lesson, but on the other hand, some of them, members of the police force, didn't act according to their profession.
And two opposition leaders declined to participate in Tuesday's National Dialogue Conference in Juba.
At the onset of this South Sudan National Dialogue process, the leadership of various opposition groups have actually broadly welcomed the concept of the National Dialogue in principle, but they actually expressed concerns about the political context and also the venue, and they were a little bit skeptical on the implementation modalities.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The National Dialogue Steering Committee will hold a conference tomorrow to discuss the findings of years of consultations with South Sudanese. Two opposition groups say their members will not attend Tuesday's conference. Dengai Galwak is a member of the National Dialogue Secretariat. He says the absence of SPLM-IO and the National Democratic Movement will not affect the outcome of the conference.
We started with grassroots consultation at the county's level, and then we had regional conferences at the state level. Actually, we have been operating based on the 10 states and two administrative areas of Abia and Boma. So what we did actually was to consult the citizens at the grassroots and also at the regional conferences. In fact, what actually made us distinct or different from these other peace processes is the fact that this national dialogue is actually a citizen-led process, you know, and it's actually a bottom-up approach. But if you compare it with the revitalized agreement is actually a top-down approach where the elites negotiated on behalf of the citizens.
I have watched Uncle Angelo Bede moderating a session on the South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation, and it appears like it was all about giving commands to people on what they should discuss. To the best of my understanding, that does not look like a national dialogue or a dialogue.
Well, according to you, it sounds like it's actually a discussion, but it's a national dialogue. You know, of course, the plenary sessions that you have been following from here in Juba were actually to deliberate on the views that were generated from the grassroots, because the mandate of the steering committee is to translate the views that were generated from grassroots consultations and regional conferences into thematic areas. And that's what we have been doing. In fact, the citizens actually talked about the issues that are confronting the country. But when we came to Juba as the steering committee, we had to categorize the issues that were deliberated at the consultations into thematic areas.
I read the final document that was compiled on the consultations with the people at the grassroots level. But let me put you on the spot here. You say the aim of the national dialogue is to foster cohesion and end conflict in the country. How would you foster cohesion when other stakeholders in the national dialogue have opted to sit on the fence?
Well, I think, Tanza, what you're trying to drive at, or the point you're trying to drive at, is the operationalization of the principle of inclusivity. And what I wanted to say is that at the onset of this South Sudan National Dialogue process, the leadership of various opposition groups have actually broadly welcomed the concept of the national dialogue in principle, but they actually expressed concerns about the political context and also the venue, and they were a little bit skeptical on the implementation modalities. So the fact that Dr. Riek and Dr. Lamakol will not participate in this South Sudan National Conference, what I wanted to say is that they are actually stakeholders in the process, but there are other stakeholders in the process. And when we talk about the stakeholders in South Sudan National Dialogue process, one of the stakeholders are actually youth, and then women, traders, organized forces, teachers, and then political parties, then churches, people with special needs, and farmers plus traditional leaders. Now, if you look at all these stakeholders, they actually participated in this South Sudan national dialogue process, with the exception of only these two opposition groups.
But these two opposition groups are the main stakeholders in South Sudan. Take, for instance, Dr. Riek Machar. He's the country's first vice president. He's the leader of SPLM-IO, a big force to reckon with in the country. Are you not worried that his absence at the meeting sends a message to the steering committee that your work is not inclusive?
Well, the practicality of this process, my brother Tanza, is that all the political parties are actually participating in this South Sudan national dialogue process, except SPLM-IO and NDM. So what we should be asking ourselves, or what is a little bit mind-boggling, is the fact that why is it that only SPLM-IO and NDM declined from participating in this process, and yet all the political parties are now participating in this national dialogue process? I think the bottom line of all this is the fact that this national dialogue was initiated by the president. And I think if they would have been the one who initiated this process, they would have participated in it. But they are only against the fact that this national dialogue was initiated by the president. And by the way, if you look at all the views that were generated from the grassroots consultations, which were the local dialogue forums, the regional conferences, they are actually the views that the opposition have been advocating for. Things to do with federal system of governance, issues of land, corruption, governance, and all these things. These are the things that the citizens actually talked about. So we're a little bit confused. Why is it that Dr. Lerma Cole and Dr. Riep are not participating in this process, and yet all whatever they have been saying, all things to do with reforms, have been said at the grassroots consultation?
I read a statement from Dr. Lerma Cole. It's actually a letter addressed to Uncle Angelo Beda. And in the letter, Dr. Lerma Cole is very clear. He said he will not participate in the conference because there is conflict in the country. You cannot have a dialogue when the guns are still active. You do dialogue when the guns are silent.
Well, Tanza, what I said earlier is that if there is peace in the country, and then what would be the need for us to have national dialogue? Of course, we are having national dialogue because there is conflict in the country. So how do we solve conflict in the country? But how do we end all these violent conflicts in South Sudan and constitute a national consensus? We can only do this through this national dialogue process. And that's why the president initiated the process, so that the process solved all these conflicts that are happening in the country.
Let me just correct you. Dialogue does not only take place where there are conflicts. Dialogue is a continuous process. It's actually a communication. It's opening up a channel of communication for people to speak out. So your conclusion that dialogue only happens where there is war is not correct.
Well, dialogue is a continuous process. You are right. But what we are trying to say here is that there is a conflict in the country, notwithstanding the fact that there are these parallel peace initiatives that are geared towards realization of a sustainable peace in the country. National dialogue is also one of the initiatives that contributes to the lasting peace. We're actually not against the revitalized agreement, by the way. It's actually a complementary part of the process that is happening in the country, which is the revitalized agreement. So the national dialogue complements this revitalized agreement. So it's also a national initiative that is also geared towards the realization of peace in the country. But it's a continuous process. That's why we have implementation phase that will deal with how best the resolutions of the National Dialogue Conference will be implemented. So it will not end. It's a process that will be there. And in the end, by the way, this National Dialogue process will even lead to a permanent constitution-making process in the country. And I think this is what the opposition have been participating in.
That's Deng Galwak Gai, member of South Sudan's National Dialogue Secretariat. He spoke to me from Juba earlier today. A court in Maridi County has sentenced two policemen to 5 years in prison for allegedly raping two teenage girls aged 15 and 16 who were in police custody. The court also dismissed two police officers identified as Peter Yahul and Isaac from the South Sudan National Police Service. The court also sentenced two other officers for 4 months in prison for attempted rape. Western Equatoria's State Acting Police Commissioner says the verdict should send a message to security forces who abuse citizens. For VOA News, Siba Martin Murangi reports from Juba.
Maurice Bazia Tito, a relative of one of the teenagers, says the two girls were trying to escape from Maridi to seek a better life in Juba. Tito says the girls' parents took them to police station in Maridi and asked police to lock them up to teach them a lesson on October 22nd.
They were trying to escape to Juba because, like for them, they thought things were only good in Juba because they never been to Juba, so they had to escape to Juba amid this crisis of pandemic, which is unfortunately on their side. They were taken back to the police to give them a bit of lesson, but on the other hand, some of them, members of the police force, didn't act according to their profession.
Tito says the following day, the two girls told their parents what had happened, but it took another 3 days for police officials to take action against the two officers who raped the girls. On October 30th, Maridi County Court Judge Angelo Daniel Yod, who presided over the case, sentenced Lance Corporal Gabriel Peter Yahul and Isaac Idris to 5 years in prison. Judge Yod also dismissed the two men from the South Sudan National Police Service. In addition, Judge Yod sentenced three other policemen, Izkia James, Benneth Asia and Baraka Ramadan, to 4 months in prison for attempted rape of the same teenagers. Tito welcomed the court's swift action taken against the two policemen.
About the verdict taken by the state taken by the government,
Brigadier Hussein Girisi, the Western Equatorial State Acting Police Commissioner, condemned the behavior of the police officers.
Very bad, what we call behavior in the police act. The acting commissioner of police of Maridi, Colonel Joseph Taban, he did serious measures against them. He opened a case under Article 66, Penal Code 2008, and now they are praising the law.
Brigadier Girisi says the court verdict and sentence should serve as a strong warning to deter other members of the security forces from abusing citizens, including sexual abuse of women and girls. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone from Juba, Rajab Mohandes, Executive Director for Responsive Governance, says the police are supposed to be protecting the country's citizens, not violating the law. Mohandes welcomed the judge's decision to sentence the police officers to prison, saying it proves that the government is doing something to end the abuse of citizens, especially women's and girls' rights.
This is an important step by the government, and it sends a strong message to all those who have been harassing civilians that there are consequences to this in the law, and that the law is being followed. And so with this, we call on all officers in uniform to ensure that they follow and instill discipline among the forces to provide a sense of responsibility that they have under the laws of our country to provide protection to civilians. It is so disturbing. Soldiers in uniform, policemen for that matter, would rape teenagers.
Mohandes says some South Sudanese were losing hope in the government's ability to punish violators of human rights, but says recent actions by officials to punish members of the security forces accused of rape indicate all hope is not lost.
We witnessed the court-martial in Yei, where dozens of officers, military officers, were charged for harassment of civilians in different ways. And now this incident in Maridi was swiftly, just within a week, The culprits were taken to court and charged.
Officials in Maridi County say they have recorded more than 36 reports of rape since the outbreak of coronavirus in April this year. In one case last August, a 17-year-old boy was found guilty of raping a 6-year-old child. For VOA News, I'm Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
Police in the Jonglei State capital, Bor, says at least 4 people have drowned in flood waters in the past week. Jonglei State Police Commissioner says the water levels in some of the flooded areas in Jonglei State have reached neck high. The Office of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission says 35,000 people have been displaced by floods, with about 180,000 in Bor town alone. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Bor resident Stephen Maliet Ding Duhut says his 58-year-old stepmother, Adao Biaratim, drowned yesterday while trying to evacuate her belongings from her flooded home in Bor's Lake Yak neighborhood. Ding Duhut says his mother was wading through 2-meter deep flood water when she drowned and no one was around to help her.
Her home had been flooded, and there are some luggage that was in the house. So she went there and she was trying to remove those luggage to a certain place or to a certain room whereby she was about to struggle. So unfortunately, she fell down and drowned. So that place was a bit deep. So she drowned there, and then people got her yesterday at around 7.
Ding Duhut says the family is unable to bury their mother because the cemetery is flooded at the moment. He says her body is being kept in a mortuary.
The burial place not known up to now because the previous cemetery area is already flooded. So we as the family members will be asking the government of Jonglei State if they have a place for people to be buried. Or otherwise, we will sit as a family and we will discuss what to do.
Major General Joseph Mayana Akon, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, confirms at least 4 people have drowned over the last few days and warns the numbers may rise.
We have just been informed that some people have drowned because of increasing water. There is somebody, a young boy, drowned at Mashuar area. The name of that guy was Amon Paranya Amon. He was found floating on the water. The other guy drowned in a Chingdi. He's a guy Reg Siong. I'm told that I was just informed the guy was sick of malaria. So I think when he was trying to cross, he was unable to cross and he fell down, and then he got drawn there in that place. So far, we have four people who have drawn because of the increasing level of the water.
The River Nile continues to overflow, which has caused widespread flooding in Bor. Some residents are using plastic sheets folded in the form of a canoe to carry children, food, and other belongings to reach higher ground. But Mayan says plastic sheets are fragile and warns people who use them as canoes are at high risk of drowning. Bol Deng Bol, executive director at Interpit South Sudan, a Bor-based civil society organization, says people have resorted to using plastic sheets to evacuate because the government has done almost nothing to intervene ever since President Salva Kiir declared a state of emergency in Jonglei State due to flooding 3 months ago. He says asking youth to go the front and close the dike is not enough.
The state of emergency is supposed to involve other organs of the government, not only the executive in the state, where the secretary general or the governor will say, let's do this, but the government should also involve themselves in the real doing, you know, in the real work. In this sense, I mean the organized forces of the government, including the army. they should involve themselves in, you know, in the active work here.
The incidents of droning could have been avoided if the government intervened to end the crisis, according to Deng. But adds, it is never too late for the government to rescue people at risk of droning now. According to the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, some 350,000 people have been displaced by flooding since July in Jonglei State, with about 180,000 in Bo Town alone. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bo.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is the relationship between Sudan and South Sudan? Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
I got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Some South Sudanese and Sudanese political activists are calling on leaders of the two countries to take advantage of the current suitable political environment to strengthen relationship between the two nations. Some activists say, though Sudan and South Sudan are now two separate nations, the two countries have a lot in common. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking at the Tabor Press Media Forum in Khartoum over the weekend, Sudanese and South Sudanese activists said the two countries have not resolved several political and economic differences since South Sudan seceded from Sudan in 2011. The activists say immediately after South Sudan declared its independence, the two countries behave as enemies rather than old friends, something which led to the emergence of several armed rebel groups in both countries. Speaking during the forum, South Sudanese political activist Farouk Gatkwath said the administration of the ousted Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir did not show much interest helping South Sudan stand on its own feet after independence, which led to the creation of more problems in forming the new country.
In the first place, the Sudanese government was supposed to divide movable and immovable assets between the two countries. This is a worldwide practice. Why? Because all of us contributed in building the whole Sudan since the beginning up to the separation time. I have a right in Sudan before the separation, but they were only interested in oil.
Gatkwath says now the two Sudans have what he calls a suitable environment to strengthen cooperation in several fields, which he says will benefit both nations. Speaking to this program on the sidelines of the forum, Sudanese journalist Iman Kamaluddin says South Sudan and Sudan need to integrate politically and economically. Kamaluddin says since leaders of the two countries are now keen on improving each other's stability, they should strengthen their cooperation for a better future of the Sudan and South Sudan.
If the two countries focus currently on economic cooperation, they will gain a lot of economic benefits. It will contribute positively in achieving lasting peace between the two nations. If you look at the already integration among communities along the borders, that is already something the government could build on for a better future.
Last week, Sudanese and South Sudanese security and defense officials signed a memorandum of understanding to strengthen security cooperation aimed at securing the country's shared border to streamline the movement of people and goods between the two nations. Rebecca John, the cultural attaché at South Sudan's embassy in Khartoum, says the long period of war in both Sudan and South Sudan devastated the economies of both countries and forced thousands of young people to leave their homeland and embark on the difficult journey to Europe or other foreign destinations. John says, even if peace is achieved, there is still a need to convince the youth to stay home and make them love their country.
Let us cultivate patriotism in our kids. Let us teach them about positivity in our countries and in our leaders. We have a lot of positive sides to stay in our countries than going to foreign countries. Now that we have achieved peace, our youth should no longer go to Europe. Who is going to implement our social peace?
South Sudan's Deputy Finance Minister Agok Makur admits the economies of both countries are now on the verge of collapse because South Sudan and Sudan have spent too much money funding wars. Speaking at the same event, Makur says now that peace is prevailing in both countries, South Sudan and Sudan should improve their economic cooperation.
Now our South Sudanese pounds have fallen against the hard currency, and it is the same situation here in Sudan. What are the causes of this economic inflation? It is because the two countries have been experiencing the economic and political battles. We are unable to strengthen our local currencies. And if our currencies continue to fall against the hard currency, we will continue to face more challenges.
Participants at the forum welcomed the Juba peace deal between the Sudanese transitional government and the armed groups and called on the Sudanese and South Sudanese holdouts groups to quickly join the peace process and engage in serious political dialogue to help bring about lasting peace and stability in both countries. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Peter Mouchol singing about leaders of a corn village in Warrap State.
Yeah, jump, Mountain Lady. Yeah. Yes, DJ Pony Paris. Produce a big palate. Yes.
We've been listening to Peter Mouchol singing about leaders of a corn village in Warrap State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask if you must leave your house. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bangalairo, Bazo Bangwana Ball, Banyam Wood Drive, Banyam Twin Mayadit,